So welcome to Citizens Climate University. It's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and me with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to climate change and effective climate advocacy. And as you can see, tonight's actual focus is going to be on facing the pain, mental health for climate advocates. And to facilitate tonight's call, we're very lucky to have our very own Dr. Robin Cooper. Dr. Cooper has been a San Francisco CCLer for over 6 years now and has a firm identity as both a climate advocate as well as a psychiatrist, with over 37 years working with people struggling with emotional pain in her clinical practice, as well as her position as volunteer clinical faculty member at the University of California, San Francisco Department of Psychiatry. And she is very excited tonight to use her professional expertise to address some of the mental health aspects for those of us as advocates. So we're incredibly lucky to have you on the call tonight, Robin. And just a quick review, tonight's learning goals are fivefold. We're really hoping that attendees should be able to have the following grasp while walking away after an hour's webinar: understanding some normal psychological reactions and coping, understanding the unique stresses of being a climate advocate, understanding new concepts that are arising in the literature like eco-anxiety, helping identify personal fears, challenges, coping, and achievements through an interactive discussion that Robin will help facilitate, and then really having the opportunity to develop and share suggestions for sustaining long-term advocacy. So without further ado, I'll get out of the way, Robin, and we are so looking forward to having your instructions tonight. Thank you so much for being on the call, everyone.
Thank you very much. And I'm glad to share this with everybody and hope to stimulate some thinking and some discussion. So let me begin. It's my firm belief, and I have devoted my professional career to the idea that to know oneself more freely is to free oneself. That as we face and understand our difficulties and anxieties, whether those are internal or external, and usually those are a mixture, and if we know more fully how we cope with these anxieties and challenges, we're better able to tolerate complexity, ambiguity, and contradictions. And we expand our range of choices, allowing for greater flexibility and creativity in managing our troubles. So it's with this perspective that I focus my goal today in a particular way. It's to shed light on the psychic underpinnings in the service of greater self-awareness, not for some like general, like it's good for you to have a clean psyche and be more advanced. I hardly think that, but with the explicit goal to sustain and promote enduring, dynamic, and effective political action over the long haul. So this time together, this seminar, we'll focus on trying to explore what we face emotionally and how we cope with that with the work of climate advocacy. I hope to provide a framework for you to think together about some of these ideas, and that we can explore the supports needed to sustain engagement in healthy, and some then in ways I also hope fun work that we do. So I'm going to divide the presentation into several segments today. First, I'm going to lay out a framework of ideas, some conceptual frame, so that you have ideas to hang your hat on as we approach expanding our own personal inventory. Then there'll be time for some sharing and personal exploration. We'll divide in pairs and have conversations guided by questions to stimulate your thinking. Then we'll get back together again, and I hope to leave you with some specific strategies for moving forward. I just want to set the landscape where we are. I, like most of you, are probably in a kind of state of being overwhelmed. I often feel shell-shocked these days. The assaults come nearly daily. We're faced with the awareness of the escalating pace and severity of the natural disasters and threats that climate change is bringing upon us. not just for the future, but what we're already experiencing now. Climate change is occurring earlier and a much greater magnitude than scientists previously predicted. The landscape also is fraught with the political upheaval that we're also experiencing on an everyday basis. But we also hold a lot of opportunities and forces of hope as we simultaneously know and face the affronts and challenges. The greater public engagement of citizens in the political process with new and marginalized groups activated is hopeful. We also can be rightly proud of Citizens Climate Lobby's growth and successes. I think last week on our Saturday call, Danny outlined the parameters of success, and we're busting out of everything. Everything that we measure is better and better each year. And we can also be proud of the work of the Bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus that keeps growing. So we're facing a really complicated landscape with a lot of emotional toil. What we're not going to do today is focus on a review of the mental health aspects of climate change. It's a very robust area of work. It's an area, an important topic, and one I spend a lot of my energy and focus on through my work with Climate Psychiatry Alliance. I work with Climate Psychiatry Alliance. I'm one of the co-founders and a member of the steering committee. And we have a mission to educate the public and the profession about the psychiatric and mental health implications. So I'm not going to delve into the mental health aspects of climate change, nor will we deal with the issues of psychic denial in our broader culture. It's, again, a very worthy topic and one that I think CCL has addressed well at other times. But let's move on to talk about some of those concepts that I thought I would bring to your attention. Eco-anxiety. My colleague in Washington, D.C., Dr. Lisa Van Sestren, has called this pre-traumatic stress, pre-traumatic. It's a new, vaguely defined term speaking to the anxiety that some people face with facing the existential threat that we're aware of. I and my clinical colleagues attest to seeing unregulated and overwhelming states of profound anxiety, worry, and depression in some of the clients we're seeing. There's a sense of helplessness, frustration, with feeling of not being able to make a difference, feeling small in the face of this enormous threat, a feeling of ineffectiveness, of powerlessness. And some people are talking about being riddled with a feeling of guilt as contributors to the decline and demise of our planet. Thoughts when you're struggling with eco-anxiety can become obsessive with thinking that's repetitive and unproductive. Emotions can oscillate from states of numbness and shutdown to being overwhelmed and flooded with intrusive thoughts and feelings. This is not a good state to be in. Not at all. But I want to contrast this to normal anxiety. Worry, concern, sadness, those are not maladaptive feelings. Those are normal reactions to adverse circumstances. I want to quote from Joanna Macy. She's a Buddhist scholar. She lives in the greater San Francisco Bay Area, the East Bay. She writes and teaches about the spiritual and psychological dimensions of our current time. And she's a wise elder. I don't think I can say it better than she. This is a dark time, filled with suffering and uncertainty, living cells in a larger body. It's natural that we feel the trauma of our world. So don't be afraid of the anguish you feel, or the anger or fear, because these responses come from the depth of your caring and the truth of your interconnectedness with all being. She goes on and says, the refusal to feel takes a heavy toll. Not only is there an impoverishment of our emotional and sensory experience, but this psychic numbing also impedes our capacity to process and respond to information. The energy expended in pushing down despair is diverted from much more creative uses, depleting the resilience and imagination needed to bring fresh visions and strategies. I find those very wide words and a guide in some of the work that we're doing. Another concept, scolophagia. It's a kind of newfangled, strange word, and I usually hate these words. It takes me a while even to know how to say them. It comes from a Latin word for comfort and the Greek word for pain. It's a kind of nostalgia for while you're still at home. It means a loss of the experience of solace from and comfort from the places that used to bring this. It reflects the feeling of a deep sense of grief as the experience of the physical damage to our world becomes felt and puts us in touch with our own dependence on the natural environment. My family has gone to this area, and I don't think that the green one does matches nothing about the beauty of the Sierras or Yosemite. But it's that reminder. That is the place where my family went year after year after year. It was a place of freedom, pleasure, and a retreat from the urban life that we feel. The year of the massive fires were horrible. My husband and I traveled up to this area after the fires. And when we got to that border where the green forest stopped and the burn was apparent, I was just in shock. I gasped. And my heart sunk. And I shed tears, both for this destruction of this land, but really also for myself, knowing that this place will never return in the same way it was. And myself, my family, my loved ones will not be able to have that as a part of our place anymore. And my loss is like minuscule, tiny, tiny compared to the suffering and the loss that many, many people have experienced around the world. It's a painful time to recognize that the places that you cherish are no longer there. Secondary trauma, another concept. These are distinguished from primary trauma, the trauma that is experienced with exposures to repeated threats and events in one's life. And I make the assumption that most of us in CCL are in this category or have this risks, but I don't want to downplay those who have had direct experiences with the ravages of major storms, droughts, wildfires, floods, and possible displacement from their homes. The idea of secondary trauma is taken from the professional literature regarding the risks that psychotherapists and counselors have when they work with patients or clients who have had extreme traumas. There's a quality for some people of taking on some of the experience and symptoms that their clients have experienced. Symptoms often mimic what the client has with PTSD, anxiety, fluctuating states of arousal or avoidance. It's a kind of vicarious trauma. The risks are significant and lead to a compassion fatigue, a quality of like, I just can't care anymore. It just doesn't matter. A need to push it away. And the real risk for this is burnout, not being able to sustain the work. We're not only seeing this with psychotherapists, but also There's a profound way that this is being experienced by scientists who are studying and observing the direct impacts of climate change. Their daily confrontation all over and over and over puts them into a direct experience. An Australian writer, Joe Deegan, began asking climate scientists how they felt on the front lines of doing their work. And he's reported back some of their comments. "I feel exasperation and despair in equal measure. Nervous, worried, depressed," are what some of them say. And Dugan says, "These people write complex research papers unpacking every aspect of climate change, analyzing it thoroughly and clinically, but they're not robots. These scientists are mothers, fathers, grandparents, daughters. They're real people. They're not robots. They're concerned. And we're seeing scientists having trouble sustaining their work. We as advocates have some of these potential risks. We have chosen, we have made a choice to stay connected, engaged, immersed and attuned to the impacts of climate change. These impacts and effects of climate change are in our face repeatedly. There are risks to this, but it's not only that they're risks, they're opportunities. There's opportunities for growth, incredible positive feelings of pride and competence, and the sense that the work we engage in is meaning, has a meaningful contribution. And I'm going to call out one of the people on the call tonight, a colleague of mine, who attests that the active work of getting involved as an advocate has a much greater impact on the depression he was feeling when he first learned about climate change than Prozac or any other antidepressant that I'm likely to prescribe. So these are big feelings. And all of these emotional states take a psychic toll. And we all develop largely unconscious ways of managing this psychic stress and toll. We need to create some psychic equilibrium. We all need to do this. This is normal human functioning. So how do humans cope with states of worry, anxiety, and threat? I want to review some of those unconscious mechanisms and point out some areas where there's potential difficulty. Denial. You all know what that is. It's kind of making what is true not true in your mind. It's not one of the things that any of us who do this work are likely to be in that camp. Intellectualizing. This is an over-reliance on ideas to cope with states of great distress. Getting it in your head, but keeping it away from your gut. It's keeping these ideas isolated and kind of at bay. That's what it's supposed to do, protect you from overwhelming states. But so it can be a very useful coping strategy, but it does have costs of emotional constriction, just as Joanna Macy said. And this can be very useful as long as it does not interfere or distort reality. Those are really important things. Intellectualizing is one of the things that I know I rely on, and sometimes I can actually even feel in my head like a little bridge, a little barrier wall being built where I know there's an idea here and a feeling here, and I'm gonna push on with the thoughts. Disavowal is another mechanism. It's a little bit more dangerous and has a slippery slope. From intellectualizing. It has that experience of, I got it, but it won't affect me. I'm safe. It's often the distance. That risk of distancing that reality can be distorted and therefore not faced. That's the point of protecting oneself, not facing the distressing feelings. There is a successful emotional calming with this, but it's not very effective for sustained, effective problem solving. I want to talk about a more capricious mechanism, defense mechanism, splitting. Splitting is psychically keeping all the good and all the bad separate. They don't touch. It's a psychic attempt to keep at bay, to keep out of the awareness, the reality of real and profound losses and emotions. But the reality is that even as we struggle to minimize the impacts of climate change as advocates, we are already set ourselves on a course where profound losses to our world are occurring and will occur. I think none of us can conceptualize what that future will bring. Our imaginations can't comprehend this. And to avoid this unknown and avoid facing the unthinkable, we avoid this confrontation. And what I suspect leads to avoiding what I think is a necessary grieving process. To be in touch with the sadness and integrate the sadness of those emotions without retreating to despair and hopelessness. This is the emotional task of balancing the good and bad, tolerating the both. This emotional splitting of the good and bad has particular pitfalls for some of the narratives within the climate movement. Although we've become a lot more sophisticated, we still fall into thinking, feeling, and describing both a doom and gloom scenario, painting the catastrophic picture, the all bad, and then, whew, the shining light, the solution, what we bring to the table, with the unspoken implication that right will prevail. If we just work hard enough and long enough, we'll not have to face profound losses. We'll get out of jail fairly safely. That goodness wins. I mean, really, Martin Luther King said that the arc of history bends towards justice. But I will put to you that there are not simple ways out. This is tough, complex emotional balancing, and it is my belief that to simplify is at our peril. The risk is a profound disillusionment as we face the inevitable bumps and disappointments. It is a setup for despair, retreat, and burnout. And this, I believe, is a particularly crucial moment for CCLers, since we have the potential of a possible bill coming up. Will the bipartisan caucus, of which we're so vigorously courted and of which we're so proud, truly be able to deliver something that is robust enough? We don't know. Will we be duped, not by any particular leader, but more by our own processes that need to find hope and protect ourselves from the awareness of the costs, grief, losses, complexities, and the inevitable compromises? I suggest that having our eyes wide open allows us a much more nimble psychic responses. I want to be cautious that we don't turn CCL into a group therapy kind of group or a touchy-feely, because we do really have work to do. I think there needs to be space. And I hope that each group can grapple with some of the ways to do that. So I put together some ideas. Maybe people can get some use and some help from. They're just my ideas. They've been generated by some readings that I've done, you people are just as capable of adding to them, but I'll share them because they may give you some ways, some tips to take with you. And I call them 5 cents counseling tips. And Brett's put this in a form that's available to you. And I also have them if people need them in a printout form. So just one. So accept the severity and complexity of the problem. Avoid oversimplification and Pollyannish views. That's what Mark was saying. Tolerate and grieve those real losses that come from that awareness. But then, Mark, just as I was saying, avoid those apocalyptic scenarios leading to hopelessness. So that balance. And I have a reference to some psychoanalytic writers if people want to know about that, Sally Weintraub, that I can also offer about some of that. So recognize and cherish the possibilities of the work that we do while also tolerating the limits, tolerating the awareness that we're not going to go back to that lovely way it was when we were young and able and things didn't look so bleak, but cherish the possibilities simultaneously. Have a realistic awareness of your contributions. You can make a difference with what you do. And take pride in those contributions. But simultaneously, you cannot make all the difference. You can't do it alone. Be humble and honor what others contribute. This is one of my struggles. I have to be able to say, that part I can't do, this part I can. So don't take on too much. It burns you out. Do what you do well and do what you enjoy. And here I want to give a shout out to Madeline Pera, who told me this at my beginning work in CCL. And I really cherish that advice. If you take tasks on that are just obligations, they're not sustaining. Recognize, honor, and build on the range of the talents that you have and that many others have. But do what pleases you and what you're good at. But not just what you're good at now. Next one is challenge yourself. Take risks. Push yourself a little bit more. It is amazing where I am today from where I was 6.5 years when I started with CCL. What I know and what I'm capable of doing is so different. It makes the work more interesting to push yourself. Take pride in that growth. Focus your attention on doable problem-solving activities. Define discrete, achievable actions and projects. Pace yourself and maintain balance. Micheline, I'm not sure I got your name right, from Fresno. Ooh. You said you meditate, that are relaxing, that are restful. Restore yourself. Unplug. Don't be overwhelmed. And I don't want to say take a hike. Maybe you don't like hiking. Maybe you like something else. Maybe you like to go to the movies. Do what's good for you. And the last, along with what Connie said, lean on your fellow advocates. Share your concerns, worries, challenges, successes, and joys with those that you work with, and find a space to do that. My 2 cents. Hope they're helpful.
Wonderful, wonderful work, Robin. What I'd also love to close with here, I know we're right at the top of the hour, but here is a slide featuring Robin's email as well as my own. And both of us would love to be available to continue this conversation. It's robincooper50@gmail.com if you aren't able to see this if you're calling in. And mine is just brett@citizensclimate.org. And the other wonderful resource that I'd recommend that dovetails wonderfully with this discussion tonight, especially what was shared there at the end, and really wanting to prioritize having a chance to sit with and acknowledge the real feelings that folks are dealing with, rather than always feeling like you have to be task-oriented or a true leader without really, you know, delving in deeper, is this resource. It's a link to one of our action teams. It's a climate peer support group, and they're using a framework called Ongoing, and they have a wonderful opportunity to really kind of focus in on a lot of those needs that were explored earlier and then move towards a place of deeper listening through a combination of mindfulness and nonviolent communication. And if anyone's interested in that, the link is in the slide deck as well tonight. Here's, I guess, just a quick reminder of how you can find action teams in community. And you can see the peer support one is right here in the action team directory if you're interested. I've actually participated and can give it a full approval from my own experience.
That's big stuff, big challenges. And it's likely stirred up, and I hope it has, some thoughts and feelings for you. And even if some of those are unpleasant, challenging feelings. I want to open the time together now to the opportunity for you to delve into a more personal reflection with a partner.
We'll have the chance to really kind of reflect on tonight's call and, you know, what also brought you here with the following three prompts. The first one is, what are the top one or two personal challenges for you in your work as a climate advocate, and what ways do you cope with those challenges? The second one is, what is something that you're really proud of doing, and what is the most satisfying part of doing that work? And then the third one is, what additional coping tools and support would enhance your satisfaction and help you meet the challenges you face? So what we recommend is spending about 4 minutes on each of these three questions. So here we are, top of the hour. I just want to close by saying thank you so much, especially to Robin, for putting together an absolutely phenomenal presentation that I know all of us deeply benefited from, and all of you for making time tonight to enjoy and just be vulnerable and share into stepping into this space for why brought you to tonight's webinar, and clearly what we can do to be more effective in our advocacy and still have that healthy work-life balance that Robin was talking about.
I'm going to just ask Brett to put on this piece of music.
Yes.
Because this is how I get my restoration at the beginning of each year from this extraordinary folk singer, and wanted to leave it with you with the idea that we're not alone and we can't do it alone.
Can be one, many stones can form an arch, singly none, singly none. And by union, what we will can be accomplished still. Drops of water turn a mill. Singly now, step by step, the longest march can be won, many stones can form an arch. Singly now.